Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. Thanks for spending your valuable time with me and my awesome guests. Well, that little snippet of a cut was by Diva Haley, her Sacred Alchemy CD, and that was called Aphrodite. I'll play the whole thing at the end of the show after our Sacred Salon tonight. Well, if you're new to the show, I'm your hostess, Karen Tate. I'm the author of two acclaimed books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and its bookend, Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth. Whether you're an armchair tourist or you actually get out there on the ground, whether you're a solitary practitioner or you're part of a group looking for insight and ideas to live a goddess-inspired life, well, I invite you to check out my website at KarenTate.com and learn more about my books, tours, workshops, and we also do Sacred Sunday services every fourth Sunday at the Green Man in North Hollywood. While you're there, don't miss the free meditations. They're my gifts to you, my listeners. And also, please, all listeners should really know that Blog Talk hosts actually pay for their airtime. So your contributions to keep me on the air are welcome. I pay out of my pocket to give my guests a platform to teach and share their wisdom. There are PayPal buttons on my Goddess Store page on my website if you'd like to make a credit card contribution, or you can always send a check, no matter how large or small. And if you have any questions about that, you can always email me at KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. I wanted to make an announcement tonight. I'm very happy to report that I have been chosen to be one of the speakers for the Inspiring Women's Summit that's going to be happening from April 9th to 15th on the air. And I'll be telling you more about that next week, but it's very exciting. People like Marianne Williamson are involved, and I'm happy to be one of the women that is going to lend some insight and share what I believe about the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. So if you're ready to embrace your destiny and change the world, if you want to get empowered to take a stand for yourself and the planet, if you want to experience your femininity in a whole new way, well, consider listening to the Inspiring Women's Summit. And you can find out more about that at their website, inspiringwomensummit.com. Well, tonight, you know, we're doing our Sacred Salon, as we've started to do for the last few months on the first Thursday of the month, and I have with me to start the show Flash Silvermoon. She is going to be telling us about the energies that we can expect in the next couple months. We're also going to be talking about caring for your animals, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about Saturn returns, too, and what those are. So, Flash, you there with me?
Sure am.
Well, thank you for being with me again this month. This is the second month you've been with me, and it was fun last week, and I got some good feedback from listeners that they like this new thing we're doing before I start the Sacred Salon. So why don't we get started with, what can we expect is, what's happening in the heavens in the month of April, and how will it affect all of us?
Well, it will affect all of us a little bit differently because we have different charts. However, there are certain trends that will be affecting most of us in a similar way. For instance, spring is in flower in most places in this side of the globe anyway, and it's a time of hope, and that feeling of hope is reawakened. We've come out of the cold and the dark, and we're feeling this essence of a brand new day. And you think April Fool, it's time for us to be acting the fool a little bit and loosening up our constraints. And today we are fortunate in that the planet Mercury, that has been going backwards since March, middle of March, today it is moving forwards. And I think we might have talked about that a little bit last month, but essentially, if most of you have been feeling like you've been kind of trotting through mud, particularly when it comes to trying to do anything new and get things started, communicating clearly, and it's just been, I find it's like two or three times harder to just do even a simple thing sometimes. Well, today No more excuses.
Hooray.
Goodbye, Mercury retrograde.
Yeah, I was. We were just talking before the show started while we were waiting to go live, and I was telling Flash that, you know, I have felt stuck for the last 30 days or so, maybe even longer, 40 days. It just felt like nothing was happening, and suddenly, actually, in, I'd say the last 48 hours, mm-hmm. it really felt like things were starting to loosen up a little bit, and I was starting to have some forward momentum.
And we're going to feel that even more by the time Mercury gets back into Aries on April 16th, and the things that have been just like picking up a little bit of speed are going to like, whoosh, they're going to really move.
I'm ready.
And then, then we had Mars that had been retrograde as well. And Mars is a lot about motion. And sometimes, like if you're having trouble with your car, that your movement is literally impaired, your physical body, that retrograde Mars can really mess with you April 13th.
That, you know,
moves forward.
Flash, you are so incredibly good with this stuff.
Thank you.
This, you just said it. I just got finished laying out $800 on my car. It was literally stuck. It's
yeah.
like you just know these things.
Yeah, it's called living life awake as an astrologer.
Well,
and,
I want to give you some kudos, Flash.
Sure.
For my listeners, I had Flash do a chart for me, and I have to tell you, she just could zoom in like she had a laser beam, and she was able to say stuff about my childhood that I had forgotten, you know, things that I haven't thought about in ages that I've just tucked away, and, you know, it's in that little box that you don't open. But you know what? She just knew from looking at my chart, and I would really encourage anyone out there who, I don't know, maybe you want to know more about yourself, you want to know what's going to happen to you potentially in the next year, just for, if it's for nothing else but self-awareness, you know, some tips on, I don't know, how would you say, Flash, be your authentic self, get more in touch with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, getting your chart done really gives you access to your roadmap, to what you came here to do. And we can get there quicker, slower. We can maybe not get there at all, but by knowing ourselves and knowing this is my strong point, this is my not so strong point, and this is how I can maximize my potential, I don't have to be the best Karen Tate. I just need to be the best Flash Silvermoon. And we find out it really helps, gives you more of an access and a generosity, I think, to other people as well.
Well, she's awesome, listeners. Let me tell you, if you want to do this, you have to go to her website. Let's plug you right now.
All right.
Before we go any further, what's your website again?
Very easy, flashsilvermoon.com.
Okay, cool.
And
so,
that's
right,
Silvermoon.
Well, flashsilvermoon.com.
Yes.
And if for any reason, listeners, you can't write that down, you can always email me. I'm happy to connect you. So let's move on to continuing what we can expect. And
yeah, well, a little bit more about Mars going direct. You know, we know there's been a lot of saber rattling. And, you know, probably the shadow government has a nice little war in Iran just ready to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason that things aren't getting worse as far as invasions, etc., is because of the retrogrades, and everything is kind of being pulled back. So it's simmering. And when Mars goes direct, it could get more bloody, Mars being the god of war and all that.
So when does Mars go direct?
April 13th.
So potentially we could maybe hear some stuff like that in the news by the middle of the month.
Yeah, we could. We definitely could.
Well, I know when you predicted the earthquake, you said watch this week for earthquakes.
Yeah.
There was a big earthquake in Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm not a gloom and doomer. I'd rather be wrong.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, because we also can influence how things go. You know, we don't need to just lay down, oh, there's a bad aspect, I'm going to lay down and die for a week. And then you can manifest your crappy aspects, because instead of saying, well, let's see, how can I get around this? How can I make the most of what there is to do and not
mm-hmm.
focus on what I can't do? That's how you use astrology. You don't use it to go, oh, Mercury's retrograde, nothing's going to go for me, and, you know, just better give it up. So it's about using it to help you live better, not to keep you just kind of stalling.
Yeah, you're working with the universal energies,
yes,
rather than, you know, just burying your head in the sand or working against the energies that are out there.
Yeah, and, you know, we always have the option to take it that way. And I think it behooves us to do so.
Okay. And you were saying something about the solar flares are affecting,
yes,
people and animals. And
yes. And especially, I think, the very sensitive folk, those of us, as myself and yourself, who've been long-term light workers, and just sensitives in general, and, of course, the animals are often as sensitive, if not usually more, than the people. So you may have, like, ringing in your ears, exaggerated senses, feeling bruised, your crown chakra, which is the top of your head, there could be pain and pressure, you know, you might feel like you have no energy, just kind of weak.
I can attest to that. Almost even, not really depressed, but just blah, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You think that, could that be it too?
Yeah, and also, it could also be a time where you're feeling the magnificence of your spirituality and some of that happening in the world as becoming much more divine. So it's not just like one big bummer, but it can be very physically off-putting to even feeling like you're just very, very ill. And I notice with my dog in particular, who's probably the most sensitive of the animals in the household, she's a Pisces like me. And right around when solar flares were really bad back in about mid-March, she started acting in ways like I've never seen her before, just like getting, she likes to be close, but not close this way, close looking fearful, and especially if the winds were up. And so, you know, your animals may be showing more signs of fear and just discomfort. So, as always, you want to really talk to them and let them know everything's okay. And if you're feeling a little freaky too, you say, okay, you know, we're all going to get through this, and just show them your confidence and your peace. And you can also give them flower essences. And I make gem elixirs that works incredibly, incredibly well for them. So their stones are good for you and your animals. Everything I'm saying for the animals is good for people. Just
so
to settle them down.
The elixirs that you make, you actually sell those?
I do. I don't have it technically up on my page yet. It's just mentioned, and
mm-hmm.
I have pictures of me doing it. But, you know, if people want it, they can just come to my website and tell me this is what they want. They're only $15.
Okay.
And then $5 to ship them. And I make them with often at least 12, 15 stones. Even just in the bottle itself.
What do you
mean
12 or 15 stones? I'm not following.
Okay. When I make them, it's just stone soup, essentially.
Okay.
And I ask the universe what needs to be made, and then I follow through, going through my many, many stones to see what needs to go into the bowl to create this elixir. And then I'll also have certain ones set up outside to protect and give that energy as well. And all the people that I know who are real good energy workers are loving them. I work with animals and primate centers and tigers and lions. They're ecstatic with them. So I'm very happy at the way they're working. I just got to catch up with the business end of it. I'm just so involved with the making of them. I love that. So I got to catch up.
You need an assistant.
I do.
Put it out there in the universe. Flash,
yes,
needs an assistant.
it's true. It looks like it's starting to come into fruition. Just got to get the pictures up, and
maybe when you try,
you love it.
You know, maybe an intern, somebody you can train, you know, that you can pass on all your knowledge to.
It's true.
you know, some sort of reciprocal arrangement like that, mm-hmm. you know.
Absolutely. Well, I am hoping that that is going to manifest within the next week or so, because it needs to.
Well, good. Well, you'll have to come back, you know, when you're back next month on the first
yeah.
week of the month. You'll have to let us know if that actually happened for you.
Yeah, I think it will, because a lot is moving forward. But the planet Pluto, which has been so troublesome, it's way, way out there. And, yes, they thought they could demote Pluto. Pluto says, I don't care. You can demote me. I'm still going to kick your behind. You know, I'm still going to – Pluto has a lot to do with power, and it has to do with that very, very deep, deep, edgy kind of transformation. Where, like Uranus might come in and say, oh, those are the rules? Well, I got some different ones. Let's try this. And you thought you were going to do that? Well, we're going to do it different. Pluto says, never mind rules, never mind what you even think you're doing. We need to burn it down. Then we'll start from the beginning. So then Neptune is like, hey, peace and love, everybody. And let's just all dive into the cosmic sea and become one. And that's how we're going to change everything.
Well, those seem like sort of diametrically opposed, are
yeah.
they? Or can they work together?
They theoretically can work together. And they have been somewhat. Those are called the outer planets. And when you're looking at the transits and the overall movement of things, what you really are paying attention to is when these outer planets make a big shift, either from one house to another in your chart, or how they affect a government or a culture. Because you'll see big, big changes, generational changes, when these guys start to move around. During the Woodstock years, we had Pluto and Uranus in very feisty relationship to each other. And, you know, we thought that the revolution was around the corner. And then by 72, right around there, all of a sudden that fire got put out when they changed their relationship and the culture started to get fixated on not drugs of exploration like LSD or magic mushrooms, but into down and numbing instead of opening. Mm. And people went into cults.
Okay.
So things really changed in a very big way. And right now, we are on the precipice of that revolutionary zeal kicking in. It's already begun, but come July, it's going to be really, really strong.
Well, I know a lot of the movements, I don't even know what to call them anymore because Occupy has, like, spawned off in so many different directions.
Right.
I know they're doing something for Tax Day on April 15th. I know something else has happened in May 1st. I mean, there's probably going to be so many things happening all around the country and around the world. I mean, I just read today that this man in Greece, a pharmacist, an elderly pharmacist, set himself on fire
yes.
because the austerity measures in Greece are so bad. He said he would rather kill himself and be gone than have to live his years out digging through garbage cans to eat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is this the kind of stuff you see people just sort of up in arms about this? I mean, maybe the Ryan budget that's, you know, more, you know, another version of more for the rich and less for everybody else. I mean, are people going to finally hit the streets, Flash?
Yeah.
That's what I want to
yeah.
know.
Well, you know, they started, and, of course, there was the spring last year that just set everything on fire, and that was just the beginning of Arab Spring. And then one by one, bing, 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 we saw rebellion everywhere. Finally got to this country. What do you know? And for whatever reason, you know, the Occupy movement has splintered, but that's the nature of revolutionary groups. They're ruled by the planet Uranus, which is all about splintering. They don't want Uranian energy doesn't want to be like everybody else. At first, let's all be the weirdos and we all belong together. Yay, yay, yay. We're strange folk. We're different from the predominant culture. Okay, well, actually, we're different from each other. And then they start to splinter. But we're going to really be seeing some serious stuff by July when Uranus and Pluto hit their first big square. But we don't have to worry about that just yet. But that's been in play, and that's what got the movement started in this country, when those planets started to connect in less than harmonious ways. And when I say less than harmonious, it doesn't mean that what happens isn't good. But the energy between the planets is just battling, and it's not harmonious within itself, and so we see things erupt like earthquakes, and we've got so much crazy weather right now, and that was another thing that the solar flares can create, from floods to earthquakes to hurricanes and tornadoes. We're having it all.
Okay. So, well, as if that's not enough, but we'll talk more about that. Those energies that are going to start to get real powerful in the summertime as the months ahead, roll on, as long as you're willing to still come on the show.
Sure.
So was there anything else you can think of we should be watching for in April besides, you know, a lot of activity in the middle of the month?
Well, on the real positive side, Venus will have changed signs into Gemini. It already has on the 4th of April. And between now that Mercury is going straight again, so to speak, we want to take the bull by the horns and be much more social between now. And if you are looking to get with somebody, do it before May 5th when Venus goes retrograde, because your opportunity will be much better. It's once you get the ball rolling, that's fine. So Venus goes retrograde, maybe there'll be a little more difficulty, but you don't want to start things for a love affair on May 5th and beyond.
So you want to get that in motion now rather than waiting a month. Okay.
That's right. Yeah, this is a time to be swift, because the energies are going to propel you along. And that's the thing, when these planets shift to retrograde and whatnot, we'd say, oh, that's a bad time. Well, it's not altogether bad, but it's just not good for forward motion.
Okay. Well, yeah, you've always said the retrograde is the time when you're thinking and you're planning and you're getting yourself organized and you're doing, you know, internal work. You're not just, like you said, you're not signing contracts. You're not making big decisions. Yeah, you're getting ready to do something. It's almost like winter when you're sort of dormant and gestating, you know.
Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as a bad aspect. You just have to learn how to use the energy, that's all.
Absolutely. Well, it's just like when you're doing magic on the moon cycle,
right.
You know, because tomorrow is a full moon, I believe. So on a full moon is when you pray or do spells or set your intention to bring things to you, as opposed to when the moon is waning, then you don't ask for things to come to you. Instead, you do your magic to remove the obstacles in the path of the thing you want to come to you. So it's sort of the same thing.
Yeah, in terms of this full moon, it will be in Libra. And whenever you have a full moon, just a little word here, you've got the moon is in one sign, the sun is in the opposite sign. Always, always, always. So the two energies that manifest, if the moon is full in Libra, then the sun is going to be in Aries. Aries about the self, Libra about the other. So what will come bubbling up are issues and a way to kind of have a more congenial relationship routine between the self and the other. So it's a good time for relationship magic. It's also a good time for justice, because Libra is all about justice. And I could think of a half dozen things right now that any self-respecting witch could do a good spell on that would bring justice, like Trayvon, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Be a great knight if you were so moved to take up his cause and the cause of children, particularly children of color, being murdered and getting away with it.
Absolutely.
So
well, yeah,
that's
there's
a good
some
time for that.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about the Supreme Court, too, you know, supposed to have that decision pending that's going to affect, you know, so many people's lives. You know, yeah, I mean, there's so many things out there. I mean, laws pending that affect
take
women.
Take your pick. We'll take them all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, one of the things that we'll be doing here, I really feel deeply connected to the Gulf and what has happened there and the dolphins in particular, and the way there's been so many beachings. So we're going to be playing cosmic music here and bringing that vibration out to correct the situation there.
Okay, sounds good. So anything else we need to know about April before we talk a little bit about, before you leave, and but we want to talk a little bit about Saturn return
right.
a little too.
I think that that's the main thing, but in order to just help yourself and your animals during this time, do avail yourself of the different kinds of alternative healings that you like. And if you are unfamiliar with any, go to my website. There's plenty of information about many different types, from using stones to flower essences to gem elixirs, your massage person, or, you know, going for acupuncture. You find the way to help steady your own energy or your animal's energy, because it's a bumpy ride.
Okay.
And this month isn't as hard as March was. This is going to be a bit easier.
That's good. We all need it a little bit easier.
Yes, I'll take easy.
Yeah, I mean, it has just felt like a huge struggle, and we all have a target on our back.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just been tough. Well, you know, I asked you last week, and I'm going to keep asking you until you tell me.
Yes.
Have you had I know you've been extremely busy, so I'm just kind of nudging you a little. Have you looked into how you thought the presidential election was going to go?
Well, I haven't looked the way I want to yet, but I do think Obama's probably going to get elected. But it's going to be a weird election.
Oh, you did say that. I'm remembering that.
Yeah, there's no way it won't be.
Okay.
And I just watched the movie Recount last night for the second time, and it brought me back to the whole interesting situations that occurred here in Florida during the 2000 election that was stolen.
Right.
So given that they had a Mercury retrograde that year, I would say we're going to have to keep our eyes on who's doing what. And there's so much misinformation now. It's hard to know who's telling the truth ever, except we do know things in our gut.
Right, right.
We do look at things.
Well, you know, that really worries me because, I mean, there's so much voter suppression out there right now, which,
right.
you know, adversely affects people who vote democratically.
Yes.
I mean, there's just, it's just incredible the power that seems to be out there against the people and for the corporations, for the fascism. And, I mean, man, we have to stand together in solidarity like never before, you know.
True.
I mean, you know, women, minorities, gays, you know, men, you know, all of us together, you know, whether we're union or non-union, black or white, whatever. I mean, we all have to stand together and fight this, you know, this corporate takeover of our country.
It's true. I don't know if you've been hearing this, but Roseanne is running for the Green Party.
I heard that, but, you know, I mean, Flash, I would love to have somebody like her in office, I think, because I don't think she could be bought.
Right.
But by the same token, it seems so unrealistic,
right.
considering the amount of money somebody needs to run ads and do all of that stuff. And I think about when Ralph Nader ran? He just hurt things for the Democrats. The same thing would happen with somebody like her, don't you think?
I know. I feel very, very conflicted about it because I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yes.
Which means I'm still voting for the evil.
Right, right.
So I don't know what I'll do, but the last thing I want is to do anything to help a Republican.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they, you know, Van Jones was on Bill Moore Friday night. Yeah, I mean, I've been saying it on Facebook for a long time, and people have quietly emailed me and say, Karen, aren't you afraid to say it? Because I've been saying the Republicans are traitors, and the Republicans
are
treasonous. Treasonous traitors. I mean, and they're no better than the Taliban when it comes to women's rights. And you know, and he said the very same thing, the way they didn't care about, you know, the technology manufacturing in our country. They wanted Obama to win to lose so badly. They hurt us when it came to competing with China for alternative energy. They are so self-serving. They really don't have the interests of the country at heart. They really don't.
Whoever we have really needs to put country first.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And they don't.
No.
They do not. They do not.
Well, and you know, and I guess what I'll say about that is, you know, I do hear people say the Democrats are as bad as the Republicans. I think that's a false equivalency, because it's the Democrats that are fighting for the unions, the Democrats that are standing with the women. I'm not saying they're perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but given the two, it's like you said, they're the lesser of two evils. The Republicans would wipe away Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage, everything. You know, where at least the Democrats are still feebly fighting, you know, in the operative word there is feebly fighting.
Yes.
You know, they don't, I mean, everything has moved so far right in the country, there's really no strong progressives, you know, talking about what the people need, you know. And instead, we get these spinmeisters on the right who want to use words like, well, it's demeaning to have a social safety net, you know. It's demeaning to have a social safety net.
Well, the people who need it don't feel demeaned.
No, no.
And, you know, very grateful.
Right, exactly. We want to know that, you know, I mean, look, there's so many people who've lost their pensions, that don't have money to retire, so many people that are sick. I mean, if the government wasn't there to help, they literally would be living under a bridge and getting food out of a garbage can. You know, it's just unthinkable, you know, the selfishness of the Republican Party. It's unbelievable. And they get all of these people whipped up into a frenzy saying, oh, we're the rugged individualists, you know, survival of the fittest. Well, you know what? It's not an even, you know, it's not a level playing field out there. Everybody doesn't have the same opportunities. And when you have these rich politicians who have, you know, have all the benefits from being in government that we don't have, more benefits than we do, plus they've had, you know, like Mitt Romney, the money from his dad. I mean, he was over, you know, in France to avoid the Vietnam War, pretending to be a missionary over there, living this lavish lifestyle. And what does he know? He probably couldn't even tell you how much a gallon of milk costs, you know. But he's
and even his party doesn't like him.
Well, yeah, but he's still your typical pro, you know, pro-government, I'm sorry, pro-corporate guy.
Right.
And, you know, anti-government, pro-corporate, and all he's ever done, he made all of his money destroying companies and laying people off. You know, why would anybody in their right mind vote for somebody like him who made money destroying other people's lives?
Well, it's very hard to understand how some of the poor Republicans don't get the enlightened self-interest of not supporting a jerk like that.
I don't get it, Flash. You know, for some of them, I mean, I think, and I, maybe I can get away with saying this because I'm from the South, for some of them, they vote the cultural issues. You know, they only care about, I hate to say it, but they probably think everybody on, you know, who gets food stamps and who, you know, needs help, they probably think they're all black. So
right.
They don't want their tax money going to help black people. When you know, 80% of women retire in poverty and millions of kids are hungry, that's not all black people.
No.
You know? And
it cuts
even
across the whole playing field.
Sure it does. And even if it, you know, I don't know what the statistics are, but even if there were more black people that got food stamps or help from the government, you know, they have not had a fair shake for a really long time. I mean, I grew up in the South. I know what it's like in a lot of black communities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't have mentors. They don't have hope. You know, they just don't have the same opportunities as white people do. And until, I think they really do, until there's really no racism and no discrimination in the country, you know, I don't think it will be equal out there.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, right down the highway for me, living proof of what a white guy feels perfectly safe to do. He's having a bad day. He's getting a little pissed off. He sees a 17-year-old black boy, doesn't know what he's doing, assumes the worst, shoots him, and knows that he can do it, that the cops aren't going to be on his back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's Klan country.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in that environment, too. And you know, and so many people who listen to Fox News don't even know the whole story. I spoke to my mother today who lives in Louisiana. She did not hear those 911 tapes of that boy pleading for his life.
Yeah.
She did not hear anything about the fact that this, you know, this guy was told by the 911 operator to stay where he was and
That's not right.
follow that boy. She didn't hear anything about that fella's past. You know, it's so skewed that, you know, what Fox News will tell their listeners, I mean, they only tell them what they want them to know so that they keep, the, you know, keep that, you know, that the throwing fuel on that fire of ignorance and racism.
It's true. Well, I think that we're going to see, I don't know if we're going to see everything that we'd like as an outcome, but it's going to be much harder to get away with free lynchings, just wholesale lynchings.
Well, let's hope so. Well, we kind of got off on a tangent there,
yes.
But you know, it's this is passionate stuff, and it's real. There's real injustice out there, and you know, we want to try to be on the right side of this stuff. So before we let you go for this week, or for actually for this month, Flash, what can you tell us about Saturn Returns?
Sure.
And when do people, you know, when? I assume men and women both have Saturn Returns.
Everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, the first one that we have is between the age of 28 and 30, 31 a little bit. And that's the first time that we really get to become ourselves, to really stop living for the church or the state or the boyfriend or the wife or the dog or the church, whatever. You know, it's about you being reborn into your real, more authentic self and dropping the shoulds, because most people are shoulding all over themselves. And this comes along, and people are a little bit more selfish, is what it appears, but they need to be, because it's a rebirth time. And whatever you've been doing, if you've come to this pinnacle, and this goes for both Saturn returns, the second one we experience between about 56 and 58. And whatever we didn't do at the first go-round, we get another chance. But usually, because it's happening when we're older, there's more experiences of a deeper maturation for the second one, and usually it's a little more physical. But for instance, in the first one, let's say you are married or in a bad marriage. Finally, you see the light. Say, okay, I've grown out of this. I don't need to be doing this. I might have gotten married for security because I just needed to get out of my parents' house, or I got married because I thought no one else would love me. Well, guess what? I don't think I have to sell myself so cheap. I think I'm out of here. It's not a great time to get pregnant and have a baby, although people do it, and sometimes they do it just so that they know they have someone there to love them. That what transfers there is whatever the fears of the mother are, and probably the father as well, get kind of downloaded into the child. So not the greatest thing to do, but if you've done it, then you just work it through and make sure you communicate really well with your child as they mature. The second go-round, between 56 and 58, there could be a loss of a parent, or there could be having to take on a sick parent or grandparent, a cousin, an aunt. There could be things like that going on. And there's a tendency by that time, that's really a good time for women to get croned too, because you're really mature enough to really live into your crone hag self. And you just have a different wisdom. I'm 62 now. I was actually crone when I was 50. They're a little quick down here in this particular community. And I realized, I thought I was ready for it, but when I became 56, 57, I said, oh, no. That wasn't me being a crone. That was me just doing the warm-up. Now I really am one, and I really do have a sense of, okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to finish up my life here and focus on the things I want to leave behind? I want to teach. I want to make sure everything that I've learned doesn't just die with me, because we've all struggled to learn the things that we have as spiritual women, and we can't let it just get lost.
Right.
So that can become a time where you're really trying to figure out what your legacy is going to be and how to make it happen with the next bunch of years.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, Flash, I want to say thank you very much. I'm going to probably be getting in touch with you tomorrow about maybe getting some of those flower essences for my cat. And, you know, you were so right on with the first Saturn return. You know, that was I realize now, looking back on it, my first Saturn return was when I remarried and left Louisiana and moved to California. I couldn't have changed my life more and become more of my authentic self. And I'm looking forward for the next one. I'm wondering, what in the heck am I going to do next?
Yeah, it's really nice to be able to look ahead with a little bit of vision.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of start preparing for it, you know?
Yeah, and I will look at that part of your chart. Find sometimes there's two or three cycles where you have the exact return where Saturn goes back to the place you were born. Like, for instance, I have Saturn at 15 Virgo. So when Saturn hit that point, that was the return. The cycle is the whole period of time. So the cycle, the issues come up some, but when you're right on the return, which is like sometimes a few days to a week or so, that's when you're in the heat of it. That's the hot spot.
You've already been in it a while. That's just sort of the high point of it, huh?
Well, it depends. Like, for instance, if your Saturn is in like 0 to 5 degrees of a sign, you're going to get the full blast as soon as it, like if you were like a 0 degree something, and the return began, because it's going to begin at 0 degrees. You're going to have the full speed ahead of what Saturn can offer. And usually it can be like more external things happening. Like, you know, if it was a fire sign, your house could burn down. You know, and I'm not saying, oh, wouldn't that be great? But, you know, you could have some of these more material, outer manifestations. And if your Saturn is retrograde, it's more of a slow rumbling, bubbling. And with my first Saturn return, I didn't even see any of the shakeup till the day it was done, because mine was retrograde, so it was a slow mover. But I was like, boy, you know, because I tell people, with your Saturn return, it's a time of a lot of big changes. You're going to become who you need to be and not who you're pretending to be. So big things can happen. And I thought, well, look at me. I'm still with my same partners and still in my same work, same house, same. I must be really living an expansive life. Well, the day it was done, I wound up hooking up with somebody else suddenly. So partnership changed. My band changed. Everything was 100% different, except I was still living in the same place.
Wow.
So, and I thought, whoa, look at me. I must be pretty damn aware of myself. Nothing really changed so much. Except I worked. Saturn will make you work. And, oh, did I work. The last go-round with my return, it was in the month of January, and I'm a musician, and I played out, I think it was 26 of the 30 days.
Wow.
All different places, too.
That was intense.
Yes. So sometimes it can be just a lot of work.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad. Saturn likes to work.
Well, I am gonna play you out with your song "Dancing with the Snake."
Thank you.
And let's just give your website one more time. Whether
sure.
people want tarot readings or charts or what do you call it, the tinctures and essences,
yes.
or your music or tarot deck, any of that, because you have a wonderful tarot deck too. People need to go
yes.
visit your website.
Yes, please do. It's flashsilvermoon.com.
Okie doke. Well, thank you, Flash, and look forward to you to come back the first Thursday in May.
Excellent.
All right. Good night.
Night.
Well, listeners, I'm going to let you listen to Flash's Dancing with the Snake. That's going to be about 6 minutes. That's going to help me shift gears a little bit and get ready to start our sacred salon. So here we go. This is Dancing with the Snake with Flash Silvermoon. Enjoy. enjoyed that, and I want to thank you for staying tuned in with me. We're going to be starting our Sacred Salon, and the topic of our Sacred Salon, the theme, is the glory of spring. So I hope you use the few minutes, as I did, to sort of shift gears a little bit and just let the outside world and everything we were talking about just sort of fall away. And we're going to go to that sacred place inside now and connect with the divine within, just sort of get grounded here. May your mind be clear. May your heart be pure. May your body be strong. Because we only do this once a month, let me begin by recognizing the purpose of our sacred salons. Our salons are provided to offer us a safe place to share sacred space, to provide a few hours, well, not actually hours, maybe an hour every month that we can look forward to carve out some time for ourselves, or perhaps you're listening with your family or friends or a loved one. It's a niche where you can be with like-minded community. Perhaps there's no one in your town that thinks the way you do. Well, you know, we're your lifeline. You can come here and be with us once a week, whether we're interviewing guests or whether we're doing Sacred Salon, and you can just plug in with us. It's during our Sacred Salons that we can seek out the divine within or to strengthen that connection with deity. We try to provide an environment to slip out of our commercialized corporate culture and slip into a new culture, one formed from diverse backgrounds and a rich variety of poetic, mythological, ritual, folk, and mystery traditions. When you're here with us, we ask that you attempt to open yourself to new ideas and feelings, to share your thoughts and the safety of our sacred space. Maybe you can put it in a journal. You're welcome to email me if you have any thoughts you'd like to share. And to be prepared to find your own creativity, your wisdom, maybe even your wildness. Here we strive for balance, peace, harmony, and love so that we honor the sacred feminine and we honor her as primary, complemented by the divine masculine. Our services we think are comfortable for people of all faiths and traditions and spiritual backgrounds. And as we begin our sacred service today on the glory of spring, let's remember this is the vernal equinox that's coming. The sun has moved once again. Now it rises exactly in the east and sets exactly in the west. The amount of daytime is equal to nighttime. There's balance in shadow and light. There's balance in all things as we see the new growth emerge in nature once more. We give thanks for the long nights of winter and the rich rains it's brought, but we look forward to the brighter, warmer days of spring, of promise. There's a force that brings an eternal cycle of life to our world. The sun always rises to illuminate our day. The moon grows full to brighten our dark nights. And spring brings forth moist and abundant green new life every single year. Summer warmth will ripen the fruits and grains, and the earth continues to cycle through the seasons. We seek to be aware, appreciate, and attune ourselves with this force by taking time out to celebrate the changing seasons. Honoring the cycles and changes helps us to more graciously accept our own cycles and changes and find a greater sense of harmony and balance in ourselves and in our environment. And from this balance comes a sense of continuity in life and wholeness in ourselves. So let us together in sacred space revel in the new light, in the rebirth, in the potential of the glory of spring. Now we're going to say our opening invocation, and if you'd like to follow along with me, it's sort of a call and response. And the response is, we have forgotten who we are. We have alienated ourselves from the unfolding of the cosmos. We have become estranged from the movements of the earth. We have turned our backs on the cycles of life. We have forgotten who we are. We have sought only for our own security. We have exploited simply for our own ends. We have distorted our knowledge. We have abused our power. We have forgotten who we are. Now the land is barren and the waters are poisoned and the air is polluted. We have forgotten who we are. Now the forests are dying and the creatures are disappearing and the humans are despairing. We have forgotten who we are. We ask forgiveness. We ask for the gift of remembering. We ask for the strength to change. O Earth Mother, we praise thee that seed springs, that flower opens, that grass grows. We praise thee for winds that whisper through the shining birth, through the lively pines, through the mighty oak. We praise thee for all things, O Earth Mother, who gives all life. I'd like to remind you there is no one way. We repeat that every sacred salon because it's vital in today's world to know that, to embrace that. There is no one way to engage and acknowledge the divine in our daily lives. We gather for sacred salons to nourish our soul, to come together in community, to uplift our spirits. We use these moments and time from our busy lives to help that connection with deity to manifest, to bring alive the memory of the teachings of the past and continue benefiting from this now and in our future. We encourage you to seek your own best path to the divine. Remember that it is always both within and outside ourselves. It surrounds and permeates us. We are never alone. Besides reclaiming the knowledge and wisdom of our ancient ones, we also should remind ourselves of these values and how they pertain to our current reality. Even the most experienced of us have things yet to learn, and we invite you to join us as we share our experiences to help facilitate your own journey. Now, for just a minute, I'd like for you to envision in front of you, on your altar or on the table in front of you, you can either get three candles and put those in front of you, and we're going to light each one, or you can just do it in your mind's eye. So as we light the first candle, we light this candle to the glory of spring. As you light the candle, think these thoughts. 'Tis the time now of springtime in Our Lady Fair, when the birds sing gaily flying through the air, and the sweetly scented flowers in their garments bright color hills and meadows. What a lovely sight. Now let's go to the second candle in your mind's eye and light that candle. And the second candle is our divinity candle. And we light this candle to honor Mother Earth as Ostara, to honor Osiris, representative of the dying rising gods, and Hildegard von Bingen, all who will be part of our sacred salon tonight. And the 23rd Psalm Revisited goes like this. The goddess is all I shall ever want. She introduces me to the wonders of earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. She is the enticement that draws new life. She opens the doors at death. She is the wheel, the circle, the round of birth, life, death, and transformation. Yea, though I walk through the shadowy, chthonic opening of the Sheol and the Gig, I shall fear no reprisals. Her pomegranate and sheath of grain renews me. She welcomes me back to her mead hall. She anoints my head with her sacred moon blood. My cup overflows. Surely balance and harmony shall accompany through all my emanations, and I shall live in the lap of the goddess. Now turn to your third candle, and in your mind's eye, or with the actual candle in front of you, light that third candle. It's the perpetuation candle. May we remember we are but a part of nature, our mother, who gives us all life. May we send forth into the world that, knowing lest we forget. Your crescent-shaped barge of heaven, so well belayed, full of loveliness like the new moon. Your fertile fields, well-watered. Hillcock lands well-watered, too. at your mighty rising. The vine dries up and the fields rise up, and the desert fills with green, just like a living garden. In the heat of the sun, you are the shade, a well of water in a dry, dry land. Swelling fruits to feed the hungry, sweet cream to quench our thirst. Pour it out for me, pour it out for me. Everything you send me, I will drink. To be what we are and to become what we are capable of becoming is our gift to ourselves and to you. Goddess, make us strong in spirit, courageous in action, gentle of heart. Let us act in wisdom. Let us conquer our fears and doubt and discover our own hidden gifts. Goddess, teach me to meet others with compassion, to be a source of healing energy, and to face each day with hope and joy. Let us remember we are each part of the divine. We are each part of the cosmos. We affect each other and the world around us, and with that comes great responsibility. Let us pray that we may at all times keep our minds open to new ideas and shun dogma, that we may grow in our understanding of the nature of all living beings and our connectedness with the natural world, that we may become ever more filled with generosity of spirit and true compassion and love for all life. We pray that all of humanity for one day feel the pulse of Mother Earth in their feet as they tread, and that humankind find the faith to believe in the messages carried by their dreams and see beyond the visible world. Lord Byron wrote, "There is music in the sighing of a reed. There is music in the gushing of a rill. There is music in all things if mankind had ears. Their earth is but an echo of the spheres." In other words, we are but a microcosm of the macrocosm. We reflect and echo the harmonies of the music of the spheres. We are but one human family as time and distance dims. We are part of the continuum if only we would listen closely enough to hear it. Well, for our sacred salon tonight, we're going to honor Astara and Osiris and Hildegard von Bingen. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Hildegard von Bingen, and I'd like to thank Samantha Sage for preparing this material for me. It was part of our greening of the earth, our glory of spring topics that we were covering, because not a lot of people know this about Hildegard von Bingen. So if you would sit back and relax and just take this in, you may learn something new or think differently about this this woman from the 12th century. We are forgotten who we are indeed. We think we are just a part of this great planet that is our home, but we are one with our home that we call Earth. We cannot survive without her. We hear so much today about green. Think green, buy green, drive green, live green. We think of being green as making ecologically sound choices, but do we ever really think about what that concept of green means? Maybe on a deeper spiritual level, do we think about it? Do you ever really think about what goes on at this time of the year? I think most of us probably take spring for granted. The trees are turning green. Yeah, so what? The grasses are growing on the hills. Yeah, so what? The bulbs are sprouting and we get beautiful daffodils again. But do we ever really think about the awesome and amazing energies and forces at work during spring? Take a seed. Look at a seed, for instance. It can sit dormant in an ancient cave or pyramid for hundreds of years, just waiting for a farmer, a fire, or some water. But then place it in the dirt and this little seed sprouts and emerges through the soil, breaks with the surface of the earth and takes on a new life. The simple seed has in it all the information it needs to sprout and grow, to burst into bud, then from bud into blossom. The blossom falls and green leaves emerge. From there the fruit is formed, bearing seed to begin the process again. And we call the first glimpse of this wondrous happening spring. And the earth begins to green. Well, tonight I want to talk about a woman who may have actually been the first to introduce the concept of green. And as I mentioned before, her name is Hildegard von Bingen. She lived during the 12th century from 1098 to 1179. She was born to a family of nobility who gave her to the church when she was only 7 years old. She lived in a cloistered community of men and women for years. She studied and read everything she could. When her mentor passed, she was unanimously elected the new abbess. 12 years later, she broke away from the male monastery and established a convent for women only. This was unique. This was courageous because this was an era when female religious communities were progressively dominated by their male counterparts. But Hildegard fought for the independence of her community, and under her leadership, the community she established became economically independent and successful. As an abbess of a very progressive and famous convent, Hildegard became an extremely accomplished woman of her time. Because of her amazing intelligence and independent thinking, her achievements carried her well beyond the boundaries of ordinary thought and knowledge for an average person, let alone a woman, let alone a woman of the 12th century. She was never afraid to challenge convention or authority when she believed it to be misguided. She took on many attitudes and actions that were unheard of for a woman of her time, let alone an abbess. She was a true feminist before her day. In the religious communities of Europe, she was not only respected and admired, but was also consulted by and advised by bishops, popes, and kings, not only for her intelligence, but for her achievements. Hildegard suffered from horrible migraines, and it's when these attacks occurred that she had the most amazing mystical visions from spirit. She articulated these visions as a pulsating life force present in our lives. And this force she actually interpreted as essentially feminine. It was during these attacks that she was able to enter into the sublime realm of visionary prophecy. From her experience as abbess, she went on to many accomplishments. She wrote poetry, composed music, and an opera. She drew the art of her visions and wrote several treatises on the curative and medicinal powers of plants and natural objects, among many other writings that dealt with the natural world. But what I really want to talk about Hildegard's visions and is her version of green. She actually coined the term viriditas, to which she has given the meaning greening power. Viriditas is the simple marriage of two Latin words, green and truth. It describes nature's divine healing power transferred from plants to humans. We may experience veritas daily by the healing nature of the foods we eat. Veritas is God's way of reminding us of our eternal interconnectedness with nature. Hildegard had many of her visions for greening power that came from her meditations and visions on the images of human beings as vines and branches. And as I talk of her celebrations, I ask you for just one moment to consider the meaning of spring. What makes a seed sprout? What makes new growth of Earth's precious plants, of Earth's precious plant beings mean to you? Viriditas is a theophany of the soil that celebrates the inexhaustible fertility of the Earth, a womb which never wearies of procreating. Hildegard relates the moisture and ripeness of the green of spring to the lushness of spirit. From her visions, she talks of the exquisite greening of trees and grasses, of earth's lushness. She connects creativity with the greening of the earth and humanity's ability to bear fruit, the fruit that remains, whether through a bloodline or through great works and contribution. Spirit brings a quench to our inner thirst, just as the moist greening of spring quenches the dry bareness of winter. When the thirst is quenched, the greenness brings the bearing of fruit. Without the lushness of fulfillment, people and institutions, like the leaf and the fruit on a tree, wither and die. She says that spirit is greening power in motion, making all things grow, expand, and celebrate. For Hildegard, salvation or healing is the return of greening power and moistness. Veritas is the divine freshness that we as humans receive in our spiritual and physical life force. It is the power of spring, a germinating energy, a fruitfulness that permeates all creation. Hildegard contrasts the view of the rich, moist, greening power of creativity to that of the sin of drying up. A dried-up culture or person loses its ability to create. In her own healing and awakening, Hildegard believed that it was the greening power and energy of spirit that unleashed her creativity and inspired her to write her music, poetry, journals, to paint her visions, and to continue with her preaching, organizing, and founding to her final days. She believed that she was able to accomplish once she owned her own creation-centered spiritual experience through the lush and moist greening of truth and creativity from spirit. She said that we are to be co-workers for the divine, and we are to bloom and grow. Wow, that is pretty inspirational, isn't it? Imagine sitting out in your garden or going to the beach or maybe traveling to where you know there's a, you know, green growth of trees. You know, it kind of makes one want to see if they can tap into that power that Hildegard tapped into. You know, she was connecting to Mother Earth, and Mother Earth became her source of all creativity. We can do that. We all can do that. We just have to get outside and hug that tree. Look at that beautiful flower. See all the lushness there is to behold. Well, speaking of the green things, I'd like to pay homage a bit to Osiris, the Egyptian god of vegetation and regeneration. You know, he was the husband and brother of the beloved goddess Osiris. I'm getting them all mixed up. Sorry, let me say again. He was the brother and husband to our beloved goddess Isis. If you read her ardeology, you will find some of them say that it was Isis and Osiris that taught men and women to love each other, that they were responsible for the beginning of civilization. Well, he was described as the Lord of Love. They thought he was permanently youthful. He was the oldest son of the god of earth, whose name was Geb, and the sky goddess Nut. He was the brother of Set and Nephthys. He was the father of Horus. Osiris symbolized the creative forces of nature and the imperishability of life. He was credited with bringing agriculture to humanity. His symbols were the crook and the flail. His cult center was at Abydos, Heliopolis, and Busiris. He's portrayed as a green-skinned man with Pharaoh's beard mummified with a crown and two large ostrich feathers. The green of Osiris's skin represents the verdant earth. He was the great nourisher. So we see here a male god sort of takes on the same role as Mother Earth. It's like he's the green man. The crown he wears shows that he's royalty. He's represented, he represents the silting of the Nile. This nutrient-rich material brought life to Egypt, much like the changing of the seasons we know today. The flooding of the Nile brought life, and Egyptians would pray to Osiris to have the Nile flood perfectly. If it were to overflow too much or too little, the country would fall into famine, death, and disease. The Nile and Osiris were intrinsically connected. And after his brother Set trapped Osiris in a coffin and threw him to his death into the Nile to drown, Osiris was born down the Nile, where he was deposited as a tree. His wife, sister, lover, Isis, found him there. And the tree represented Osiris returning to life fully grown and mature, which he could not have been without the nurturing silt of the Nile. Isis picked up the body parts of Osiris to bring him back to life. She could do everything except to find his phallus, which was supposedly swallowed by a crocodile. But this is symbolic. As a god, Osiris cannot truly die. His phallus or seed remained in the Nile in his sacrificial gift to the people of Egypt to seasonally replant or fertilize the soil with the silt of the Nile so that the country would prosper, so that the people would eat, so that there would not be famine, death, and disease. Isis was able to impregnate herself with his semen after his death. This goes further to show that his seed never dies and that he's eternally virile. The rest of his body parts were scattered by Isis. This is akin to the scattering of the grains in the field. This again shows he is the vegetation god. Osiris gardens, wooden framed barley seed beds in the shape of the god were sometimes placed in tombs, and the plants which sprouted from these beds symbolized the resurrection of life after death. So we see, too, how in certain cultures the god is the provider of the sustenance of life, but he, of course, needed his other half. He needed Isis to be successful. Not unlike when we see Kali standing atop Shiva. Shiva is immobile until Kali activates him. So there is that partnership where we see the goddess as primary and the god their consort. So it's time for our meditation tonight. And our meditation is going to be on Ostara and the dying and rising gods. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ostara because Ostara coincides with Easter, which is Sunday. I'm going to talk a little bit about this, and then I'm going to have you, you know, get comfortable, and we'll have our meditation. So Ostara or Esther or Easter, the vernal equinox, spring equinox, the first day of spring, these are all names for the same festival time. This is the day when the light and the darkness are of equal length, and afterwards the days get longer. This occurs when the sun enters Aries, which was just a short time ago. It begins around March 20th or 21st. It's the time when the light symbolically triumphs over darkness. So it's no wonder that the Christians put their Easter, where the god of light triumphs over darkness and rises again at this time of year. It's long been the time for gods to return from the underworld or the darkness. Agriculturally, it's the time in most of Europe and America when the seeds are sown and planted in the ground. Or for us, we're not farmers, but this is usually the time when we sort of start to put in motion or plant the seeds of activities or projects or things that we want to manifest later in the year. This corresponds, with planning of new ideas or goals, new businesses, new activities we want to start. So, you know, it's sort of a metaphor. This holiday is sacred to Ostara, the Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring, also known as Oster. Sacred to her are eggs and white rabbits. In fact, there's a legend in which a white rabbit fell in love with her, and to prove his love, he laid colored eggs for her every day. The white rabbit symbolizes the transformation of innocence and constant fertility. The eggs symbolize new life and also rebirth. In ancient times, when hens were not domesticated, it was actually necessary to climb trees and hunt for these eggs, no doubt a welcome treat after the dreary winter fare. Thus, we may have the origination of the Easter egg hunt, so many cultures still do today. Since eggs are found in the woven nests of birds, which were the inspiration for woven baskets, we can see the link between the ancient ways and our traditions today of putting colored eggs into pretty woven baskets. And why decorate eggs? Well, birds' eggs were naturally decorated for camouflage or for other reasons having to do with the preservation of the species. And that's the same reason why we decorate our eggs today and why our pagan ancestors did theirs, the preservation of the species. They used not only color to symbolize what they wanted to be born, or what they wanted to be rebirthed in the rest of the year, but they also used signs and runes and different geometric designs. To decorate your own eggs, here are some of the ancient signs and what they meant. A circle and concentric rings were used for the cycles of life and rebirth. Solar crosses put on the eggs represented the union of matter and spirit, or the union of the god and goddess. Triangles represented the triple goddess. Squares represented the earth. Pinwheels and eight-pointed stars, the sun. Wavy lines, or three C's, the letter C, represented water. Or you can use more modern symbols when you decorate eggs. You can use a dollar sign for money or hearts for love, smiley faces for happiness. You can use pentagrams and ox and any other symbol that has meaning for you. You can also coincide the symbol with the color, for example. An egg for love and friendship would have a heart on it and be pink or red. One for healing might be green or blue. One for new ideas might be yellow and show an exclamation point on it. So get creative and use your imagination. There's no right or no wrong. Decorated eggs were actually found in Egyptian tombs, but they weren't for food since the eggs were hollow. They were more of an amulet intended to help the soul find rebirth. It's known that the Druids dyed eggs red in honor of the sun. Well, today we have lots of choices how we dye our eggs. We can use commercial dyes or natural ones. But if you want to experiment with natural dyes, these are some that you might try. You can, to get green eggs, to get the color green, you use colt's foot or bracken. You can use the spiced turmeric if you want the color yellow, or carrot tops if you want a yellowish green. Onion skins will produce an orange color or a rust color. Madder root will make things red. Blueberries, of course, will get you blue, and red cabbage leaves will get you bright blue. And, of course, we know it from when we were kids or when we dyed eggs with our own children. You leave the eggs in the dye longer, it'll create darker colors. Think about eggs a little bit. Before you get together and do your ritual, either alone or in your circle, you might want to take a ritual bath and add an egg to the water, or maybe even use egg shampoo, putting raw egg in your hair. It's supposed to be wonderful for your hair and your bath. Let's see what else here. In Ireland, the shamrock is associated with Ostara because it's the green of new life, and the three-leaf variety was sacred to the triple goddess. The four-leaf clovers were and still considered lucky. They represent the four elements in balance and were also a symbol of the sun wheel. All pastel colors were sacred to Ostara, but her color is especially blue, robin's egg blue. She's the goddess of the east and spring. She is the same as Eos, the Greek goddess of the east and of sunrise and dawn. Is this why so many Christians celebrate Easter Sunday with a sunrise service? She is the maiden aspect of the triple goddess. In Hindu, she's called Ushas, and her lover and opposite is the god of the west, of death, of the sunset. The Greek goddess Vestra, who was the goddess of fire, had a perpetual flame tended by the Vestal Virgin, also fits the fire in the west theme. In our tradition, we put fire in the west, and it seems that sometime in the past, fire was the traditional element for the west, representing death, as most funerals were done by cremation in many cultures. Even the Norse ships, which carried the dead out to sea, were first set aflame, then launched. It seems a natural opposite to the water in the east, where all life begins. Maybe amniotic fluid, and where the goddess of spring, the maiden, rules. So anyway, that's a little bit about Ostara and spring and the gods associated with it and some of our traditions, just to kind of, get you in the mood for spring, because we can certainly feel it, at least we can here in Southern California. So we're going to start our meditation now, and I actually have it on a tape. So rather than read the meditation, I'm actually going to play it for you. So here goes. I want you to find a comfortable position and close your eyes and breathe and just follow my voice. Greetings, Goddess Advocates. I'm Karen Tate, author of Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking an Ancient Path. And with the help of Marion Watermoondragon of All Things Pagan Radio, I'd like to bring you for your enjoyment and to facilitate a connection with Goddess an Ostara meditation I originally wrote for our springtime Sacred Sunday services. You may share this meditation with anyone you believe would enjoy it, because sharing, giving, and reciprocity are the goddess way. Thank you for your trust to allow me to take you on this inner journey to find the divine within. So let's get ready to begin the meditation. First, begin by finding a comfortable position. Then close your eyes and breathe. Breathe in and out. Breathe in and out, slowly, slowly. Allow your mind to release any thoughts as you make ready for our inner journey. Let the suggestions of the journey unfold on the movie screen of your third eye.
Breathe in and out. Drop into that special space you go to receive suggestions from the divine. Simply allow, allow, allow. Be ready to open yourself to ideas and guidance important for you to grasp. Breathe in and out. Allow. Allow yourself to be a container, filling up with inspiration and wisdom you might glean from this journey. Let your consciousness go deeper, moving away from this place. It is as if you are sinking into luxurious pillows or walking down a flight of stairs, one step at a time. You go deeper and deeper with each step. Breathe and relax. Keep moving down that staircase to the potent and safe darkness of your being. Keeping your eyes closed, you allow the movie screen of your mind to switch on, and you see you have just been transported to the most beautiful meadow. The sun is shining high in the bright blue sky, and you feel its warmth. You see flocks of birds overhead, and you hear their calls. The clouds are like fluffy wads of cotton in the heavens. Lowering your eyes as you look around, you see a grove of trees before you. You hear the tap-tap of the red-headed woodpeckers on the ancient trunks. There are spatterings of flowers growing here and there, blue irises, yellow daffodils. You look down and see you are standing in a field of green clover. You notice some of the leaves have three leaves and others four. You feel truly lucky to be alive and embraced in nature's garden. Then you realize you hear the rush of water behind you and feel a light spray of wetness. Turning around, you see behind you is a magnificent waterfall. You feel drawn to move toward the flowing water, being a creature of water that you are. As you walk toward the life-giving liquid, you see the other creatures that the water has also attracted. There are frogs and turtles making their way along the banks of the waterfall pool. Fish are abundant in the waters. Purple water lilies float upon the surface. There's even a timid young doe getting a drink. Then you notice playing in some high grasses just alongside the water's edge is a clutch of white rabbits. Some are nibbling the green blades of grass. Others are taking care of their young ones. All are busy playing in Gaia's garden. Moving closer to the waterfall, you notice there seems to be a path of stones that will take you behind the falling water. You sense the cool darkness there, and it calls to you. Stepping along the path, you reach out for a tree to steady you. As you do, you notice that the branches are filled with birds and their joyful songs uplift your spirits even higher. Your keen eyes notice the many nests in the branches, and on one nest, very close to you, holds several pale blue eggs. Soon the mother bird is back tending this nest, and you continue along your stone path leading behind the waterfall. You are grateful for the glimpse of life you saw within the nest. Soon you are behind the waterfall and your eyes have to adjust to the darkness. You realize this cave behind the water's edge goes deep into the mountain. You feel perfectly at ease as you begin to go deeper and deeper within the cave. There is a peace and security in its coolness that lures you still deeper within. Looking down, you notice some squirrels retrieving nuts they'd hidden among the rocks. And the white rabbits you saw earlier are also here. They take no notice of you, so you decide to sit upon a large rock, perfectly positioned to be a comfortable seat. Here you enjoy simply watching the rabbits and squirrels going about the things that they do. Suddenly, you see a white mist that seems to emanate from the rear of the deep chasm before you. The mist swirls and moves toward you and around you, piquing your curiosity. You wonder at your fearlessness, but you feel secure in this womb-like space. Within seconds, the mist seems to take a more solid shape, and you hear a voice. The voice says, "Do not be afraid. I'm here to teach you that which you seek." Trusting and curious, you sit and wait for what might happen next. Within a few seconds, the mist has taken the form of a beautiful woman who reaches out with her hand and touches the top of your head, gifting you with vision. You see in this vision a woman on a throne, flanked by two lions. To her right is her consort on his throne. You see the consort's skin is a pale green like the flowering earth. From a large seed on his lap, you see vines and flowers growing full. They entwine around his royal chair and encompass his body, becoming his clothing. Then, in what seems like time-lapsed photography, the green growth matures, growing larger, fuller, and more abundant. The divine feminine tells you to look upon his face as it morphs from one face to another. And without knowing exactly how, you intuit that you are seeing the faces of the great old gods or consorts of goddess, Tammuz, Osiris, Dionysus, Attis, even Jesus, the flowering, dying, and rising kings. And she smiles at you and says, "Yes, they are one." The queen goddess touches your head again and the scene changes. Your seat now within the nest-like enclosure is still comfortable, and around you, you see colored eggs. You see red ones, blue ones, yellow, and green ones. Some have symbols on them: flowers, spirals, ankhs, crosses, wavy lines, interlocked triangles. She points to one egg in particular, and you know you are meant to touch it. As you do, you hear the words, "Ah, the garden. There is wisdom and magic in the dirt." You smile at Astara in amazement. Yes, you know her by her name now. She is the goddess of spring. She points to another egg, which you touch. And again you hear words. This you hear wisdom say: When I let go of who I am, I become who I might be. When I let go of who I am, I become who I might be. This makes you smile, and you exchange an understanding glance with Astara, who points to a yellow egg just within reach. And you hear, "Within you, there is an inner seed of radiance waiting to grow." Yes, within you, there is an inner seed of radiance waiting to grow. You feel yourself all aglow with these truths and hope, and you hardly notice the mist that was Astara is beginning to fade. Slowly, slowly, you are alone once again alone in the dark womb of Gaia. But as you look down there at your feet, there remains one red egg. You know this egg is yours to keep. As you reach down and touch it, you are gifted with one last seedling of truth that might grow within you. Sit a minute with the red egg and let that wisdom enter your heart and mind. If you haven't received the message yet, don't let yourself worry. It will come. You can take the red egg with you. Take it home and put it upon your altar so that it is a constant reminder of the wonders of this journey and the potential of both spring and the dark places. You rise now and begin to exit the cave. You take one last look at the white rabbits as they frolic in the safety of the mother's embrace. As you reach the stone pathway leading outside, the bright sunlight warms your skin once again, and you decide to sit for a moment at the bank of the pool. As you lower your feet into the water so teeming with life, that sudden shock of cold transports you back here with us. Quickly and safely, you are back here with us. When you are ready, you can open your eyes and look upon Ostara's eggs awaiting you this season. Blessed be.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. See the phase, the changing faces, the morphing faces of the different gods: Tammuz, Osiris, Dionysus, Attis, Jesus. Seeing Ostara giving you the gifts, the universal truth, the wisdom. When I let go of who I am, I become who I might be. Within you, there is an inner seed of radiance waiting to grow. Oh, and I wonder what it was you got. What message did that red egg hold for you? I'd love it if you'd email me and let me know. Well, our sacred salon for tonight is coming to a close. I'd like to thank you for being with me and sharing sacred space with me for another one of our sacred salons. And I'd like to close the night with our prayer of remembering. And I want to make sure I tell you that our earlier opening prayer, we have forgotten who we are, and this closing prayer, the prayer of remembering, they're sort of like bookends. If you like these and want to use them for yourself, you can actually find them if you go to the United Nations website. And I think they're under a section called Sabbaths. I'm not absolutely sure about that. But if you look around the United Nations website for earth-based spirituality and rituals, I'm sure you'll be able to find it, because that's where we found these. And we really like them because we think they're so appropriate. So, the prayer of remembering. Again, this is a call and response. And the response is, we rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. So if you'd like to say that with me at the appropriate time. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We live in all things. All things live in us. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We live by the sun. We move with the stars. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We eat from the earth, we drink from the rain, we breathe from the air. We rejoice in all life, we remember who we are. We share with the creatures, we have strength through their gifts. We rejoice in all life, we remember who we are. We depend on the forests, we have knowledge through their secrets. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We have the privilege of seeing and understanding. We have the responsibility of caring. We have the joy of celebrating. We are full of the grace of creation. We remember who we are. That is who what we're striving for, isn't it? Our new paradigm, where that's more who we are than what we started out in the beginning when we had forgotten who we are. Well, listeners, it's about time to put out our sacred candles that we lit at the opening of the Sacred Salon for tonight. So whether you have the three candles in front of you or they're just candles in your mind's eye, let's go ahead and extinguish the first candle, the concept candle, which was our honoring the glory of spring. And let's extinguish the second candle, the divinity candle. For tonight, we paid honor to Mother Earth, Ostara, Osiris, Hildegard. And the third candle, the perpetuation candle, the candle that reminds us to go forth into the weeks ahead, into the rest of the year, grateful and acknowledging the glory of spring and all the gifts it brings. Go ahead and extinguish the third candle. And as we close tonight, our closing prayer is, I cleanse my soul. I cleanse my mind and heart with the coming light. I cleanse my soul with the dews of coming spring. Light of minds, refreshing dew, love of hearts, renewing dew. Life's beings, restoring dew. Cleanse and recreate my mind, voice, and soul this day. May the hearts and minds of all beings be peaceful. From fall of night till day's dear light, cleanse and recreate my mind, voice, and soul. Well, I promised I would close with that song to Aphrodite, and I certainly will. I hope you enjoy it, and I want to remind you to come back to me next Thursday, and our guest will be Roar Shepherd, and he's going to be talking about the love and pains of 2012 through 2025, and Tricia McGannon, she's going to talk about the lost years of Jesus and his connection to the ancient mystery cults. I think that should be very interesting. And don't forget, later on in the month of April, Barbara Walker is going to be with me, and so is Barbara Marks Hubbard. They're going to be with me the last Thursday of the month because we are having the show on Thursdays in April. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and I'll throw a little gift out there for you, because Goddess is about caring, sharing, and reciprocity. The first of my listeners in the United States that writes me and tells me that they heard this offer on my radio show, I will send them a gift. I will send them a gift of my book, Walking an Ancient Path. Just write me at Karen Tate 108. karentate108@ca.rr.com. Tell me that you heard the offer. Tell me why you'd like a copy of Walking Ancient Path. And give me your mailing address. And if you're the first one to send me the email, the book is yours. It's my gift to you. And please remember, if you can make a donation to the show is not free to guests as myself. I am looking for a sponsor, so I put that out there. If an individual or a company or a group would like to be my sponsor, that would be wonderful. You'll, of course, get mentioned on the show, and all my listeners across the country and across the globe will know about you and your work. So think about it. If you're interested, give me an email. We can chat. So in closing tonight's Sacred Salon on the glory of spring, our candles have been extinguished, and it's time to say goodbye until next month. May Goddess embrace you in her golden wings. And this is the complete song, Aphrodite, by Diva Haley from her Sacred Alchemy DVD.
I'm Aphrodite lounging.